Blog Talk Radio.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation and broadcasting live from the Gatehouse here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome for joining me. And, well, here we are. It's Thursday night. It's beautiful. The sun's out. It's certainly not as cold as what it was, but spring is just around the corner. Actually, spring starts tomorrow. It's Thursday, March the 18th, and day after St. Patrick's Day, or actually a couple days after St. Patrick's Day. And, well, head prevailing, we're here. And, again, welcome. Tonight, our guest will be Carrie Ann Kent. She is a survivor, advocate, public speaker, author of My Innocence Lost, and she's also co-founder of Butterfly Healing. So we had a great interview with her. Deb and I on the weekend, last weekend. And, of course, Deb's not here tonight because she's facilitating a group, but I'm here hosting it. And Deb's here in spirit and as well as in our podcast as well. So first, keep in mind, okay, first off, we're only offering peer support. I'm not a doctor or a physician or a therapist or a PhD or anything like that. So all our views are my own and nobody else's. And I'm offering you my experiences. And my experiences through the Gatehouse and outside the Gatehouse. So please understand that. And again, like I say, welcome to the show. So without further ado, I'm just going to jump right into the interview and with Carrie Ann Kent. And you'll find it. I'm at a basic whole lot of wow as far as this interview is concerned. A fantastic interview with Carrie Ann Kent. And you know what, without further ado and me yakking on here, I'm just going to jump right into it, so just bear with me one second here. Let me get it to make sure I got it right. And here we go. Good morning. Welcome to Personal Transformation. This morning I have, very lucky for myself and Deb sitting here with me as well, we have Carrie Ann Kent come all the way up from Lake Huron, and I've ever looked so forward to this interview. I've been thinking about this the last couple of weeks. And Carrie is the author of My Innocence Lost, and she's also the co-founder of Butterfly Healing, along with her sister, which I'll let you explain a little bit later on. But again, welcome.
Thank you.
And welcome, Deb. Saturday morning.
Good to be here once again.
Saturday, March the 14th. It's, well, it's not very nice outside, but it's warmer than what it's been. But again, thank you for coming all the way down here to talk with us.
My pleasure.
And I look so forward to this interview, like I've been talking about it. So, first off, I guess, tell us about your journey to how all this came about.
Oh, it all started February 2012. I was going to commit suicide. I'd had enough mental abusive relationships. And, pretty rough life in the beginning, and that day I just had enough and went to the hospital, and with a security guard outside my door, had a lot of thinking.
Oh, you're done.
And after telling the higher divine off, I actually thought about it a little harder and asked for my angels to protect me and send me where I'm supposed to be. And the day I walked out, everything just started happening. Books started falling in my lap, information, healing, everything just started happening.
You kind of came right to the edge and then decided to fly as opposed to jump?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's been sending me in the right direction ever since.
Wow, that's fantastic. I know I can really appreciate that. It's kind of like what I was telling you when I first came to here, and I came up these stairs, and I'll say this time and time again, because it's when I think about it, that's how wonderful it is. I came up these stairs 6 years ago, and I'm still here.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And my healing is still going, and a fantastic thing.
Yep, we're always a work in progress.
Yeah, exactly. okay, now, tell me about your book.
My book is a bio of my life, and it talks about my sexual abuse from my father, babysitter's son, and another family member, and how it took me into abusive relationships. I've been date raped, sexually assaulted, physical, had my nose broken, mental, 3 marriages failed, and then it talks about how I healed and how I took the journey to healing to get rid of the anger, to be happy and positive. And so it's a bio, but also a self-help book.
Great, fantastic. I haven't read it, though. I will have to take it upon myself to do so.
I kind of breezed through it, which really doesn't justify whatsoever. But nonetheless, it's quite an accomplishment to do something like that. And like with my co-host here, Deb, as well, she's done the same thing. So I know she'll appreciate it even more deeply than I will for the amount of work that's involved.
We're getting there.
But a lot of work involved in it. So I really commend you for doing it.
It's good to put your life out there so other people can read it and go and understand. And I've been bulimic for 10 years and bullied and everything. So I want kind of everyone to read it in every aspect so they would get someone else has been through this and you can heal. But I just put it out just so people could understand that someone else feels the same way.
Can you do a little plug on your book while you're at it? We're here now. I'm going to get you back again before we're done as well anyway, but you might as well while we're talking. You wouldn't mind, please.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I did it through Bubba Press and Hay Publishing. And I actually wrote it in December, and it was out by March. My pen name is Daisy Ann Rhodes, because at the time I couldn't use my real name. The next book will have my real name. And Indigo Cole's Chapters, you can get it online. You're going to go online anywhere.
As I opened this up, look online just so I could read something, but I couldn't find something I could actually read as quickly as I needed to. It says that your mom was only 15 years old when she became pregnant with you. It was sort of the choice between the coat hanger abortion or a wedding. So it wasn't a really great start, and I can kind of relate to part of this because my mom was 16 when she became pregnant with me.
Yeah.
So do you want to share any?
Yeah, my mom was young, and she suspected things were going on, and she did try to go to the police, but when the police officer pulled us over and asked, I said no because it's very intimidating.
Well, that's a good idea.
So she left him, had to leave me behind, and then
she
felt like days, but it was actually hours. She came and got me, but I can't imagine. We've come a long way. We've had a lot of fights, and physical fights in our life, and not close, but the last little while, I think she's healed, knowing I'm healed. And it's come back around, and I have to remember she was 16, and she had a life before me, and that life wasn't very good.
So did your mom carry a lot of guilt?
A lot of guilt. And I was an angry child, so she didn't know how to handle me. And she was angry, and her anger wasn't at me, it was at my father, but I took it as me. So it just, we clashed for years until the last little bit, and we've become very close, and she supports me in every way, and she still has guilt, and I hope she can get rid of that, because I love where we are now. But I have to remember she's 16, and I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Who did you first tell about this?
The first person I told was in grade 6. I told a friend, and I said, don't tell anyone. Please don't tell anyone. And she didn't. But yet, deep down, you want them to tell.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she didn't tell. And that's in my book, too. And she emailed me, am I the girl you told them didn't tell? And I'm like, yeah. She was like, I'm really sorry. I'm like, well, you did what I said.
Exactly. That's a great friend.
But that was the first time. And when I actually told my mother, it was in grade 8, I had been flashed and at a store. And it sent me into... I ran away from home, stuck under a bridge. I went crazy. Cops got my home, and no one could understand why I was freaking out. So my mom finally yelled, and she's like, what is your problem? We just flashed you. And then I finally yelled it out, said, Dad raped me. And my mom just crumbled, and she was a mess. And she wanted to kill him, and I said, please don't. Like, I don't. So she had to think my mental state was not good. Do I tell or do I protect my daughter? And she protected me. And I think she has regret that she didn't tell, but she did what was right at the time.
You are still coming free.
Our journey of healing later in life with taking my dad to court has helped her a lot. And I love her. I can actually say that and mean it now.
No, Now, how about the immediate family? Like, how far did you go with that? Did you tell the whole family? Or
my whole family knows, aunts and uncles, everybody knows.
So what kind of support are you getting in that matter?
on my mom's side of the family, amazing. They all support me. They're proud of what I'm doing now. They like my strengths, and no one had any idea. So everyone is on board, and even when I have my trigger moments, they're there to help me and let me know and help me through it. And I have an amazing support system.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the phone side?
Nobody speaks to me because nobody wants to believe that it's their brother.
What would have been just for people, you know, that have children, would you say there were some warning signs that people could have actually, they maybe were aware, but they didn't want to focus on, that you had been, as you used the word in your book, right?
Yeah, well, my mom definitely knew. She knew because I changed. So how other family members couldn't have seen something, but I think also you don't want to see it. They don't want to see that this is happening. So I became, like, I was this quiet child and had such anger outbursts and, I know, it was all there. Looking back, I would have noticed it in my kids. But
the symptoms? Enough symptoms?
The symptoms? I don't know.
So you said you were quiet, so you went from... you switched to be quiet?
Well, I'd be quiet in order of anger outbursts. Like, I was both. Like, I was kind of withdrawn from people, and even in school and high school, I was felt like the outsider and stuff. And I just... My reaction to things... I mean, I really triggered. I went to see a psychologist when I was 16, and his first question was, "Are you having sex?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Do you feel like a slut?" And I just shut down.
Wow.
So for the rest of my days, I shut down, and that's when I just kind of internalized it, and my anger in my teenage years went crazy.
Oh, how can I get into that?
Yeah.
So, From when was it you really kind of realized that you've had enough and you want to fight back?
When I went to commit suicide, I decided, I said, why? You're always, why me? Why does this happen to me? Why does this keep happening to me? And then I had to realize, hey, why? Why is this happening to me? What is going on? So then I got on the path of finding books to read and doing whatever I could to heal. And
some kind of self-help.
Yep, self-help. And then when after my book came, and I was getting amazing emails back from people, and I thought, it's not enough. I'm not doing enough. I just knew I wasn't. So then I started Butterfly Healing. And I still feel like I'm not doing enough, so I keep pushing myself to do more and more and more, because I just now am on the mission to have other people heal the way I healed, and I just want to feel how it feels to let a little bit of relief go. The weight on your shoulders is just gone. And it's so important for me to other people to feel it. That's why I put everything in my life. I cheated, I've been cheated on, like, I'm not innocent, but I put it in there so people would know that you can heal, you can get through it.
Fantastic.
What are some of the three C's in your life?
Choices, chances, and changes. You make the choice, change, and take all your chances. I've taken chances. I've given up everything to start this not-for-profit, and it's been rewarding. I work hard to pay the bills, but it all goes to that, but I love it. I'm happy, and it was worth it.
So in your travels, how far do you go? Are you sticking pretty much with Ontario, or do you go to the States, or you go internationally? Or?
Right now, we're advertising everywhere, but we're sticking to Ontario. But my future plan is to go further and get my paddleboards and drive to BC or drive wherever and just do what I have to do and take them out and do anything to heal them. So we'll, even if we get the funds, fly them in to have a cottage for a weekend to be... want to do whatever we can. The more we bring in, the more we're going to...
Because that's where Butterfly Healing comes in now, doesn't it?
Yes.
Tell us about Butterfly Healing.
It's a not-for-profit, and we do paddleboarding and hiking and trying to get some retreats together. We have one in June that we're doing with Ray of Light Haven. They've done the cottage and put it all together. And just to have survivors together to talk. So, and the paddleboarding is... Water is dense. It is so natural.
Totally.
It is just so freeing. And to get them out in the water, everyone just opens up. They just, it's so comfortable. Same with the hiking, just to be in the natural environment and start talking, and people really open up.
Yeah, I saw paddleboards on your website, and I was trying to envision what you would be doing on the paddleboards. I've seen people out in the water and kind of been curious about it, but what do you do?
You can sit, kneel, stand.
Stand.
And
I love it.
Yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm. And just get in the water, natural. But even when we're sitting, we all kind of sit in our board and start talking. And once they get comfortable, it takes a good half hour, and then they start getting comfortable, and then we just start talking. And they can say nothing. They can say a little bit. And afterwards, they're like, felt really good. That felt real. And I'm like, that's what it's all about. Just to feel real.
I have really great appreciation for it, because going up north to, up north anyway, up to Concord Park, and having a boogie board and having a dog, and the dog would just get lazy and just get on my board and away it would go.
Yeah, I take my dog.
Yeah,
to
exactly. The best. The
yeah.
best.
How many people do you ideally like to have at it?
The treat we're doing, we have six, but the for when I start doing it,
co-ed, sorry,
just the girls.
Just girls.
I would like to women. I'd like to have a men's retreat.
Mm-hmm.
We still have to think about how we can do that, because some men don't want to talk to men, and men don't want women there, so we have to figure out how we do it. But for paddle boarding, men and women. I'll take out a family so we can all talk about the whole dynamic, or I'll take out a gentleman and we can just talk. So mine's are open for women and men. It's not just the little girls and women. I know that affects men. And the stats are definitely 1 in 3, not the 1 in 5. It's way higher than that.
I tend to agree with that, but I've been hearing...
Everybody does.
Yeah, I tend to really, really agree, especially what I've learned in the last few years.
Yeah.
The numbers keep going up and up and up and up, and it just blows me away every time I hear, and I... No, just the numbers coming through the gatehouse here, like it's increasing and increasing and increasing. It's totally.
Yeah. Men just don't talk about
no.
it, and I'm glad more men are coming forward, because they need that too. Because I can't imagine, but definitely the stats for men, they're closer. And that's just reported. So I definitely it's the same.
And there's also, you know, where's the line to say something is sexual abuse versus not, you know, if somebody's squeezing your butt, is that sexual abuse? For some people, it wouldn't be.
Just, if you feel violated,
that's the key.
Then that's how you, that's enough violation. If it's improper touching to you, then that's how you feel.
Yeah, it's funny, because in my personal opinion, I really do think we need to to revamp the laws in regarding sexual abuse. Everything from an adult level to a child level, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's way out of date. Way, way out of date.
We're still back in the 70s.
We're still back in
Nothing's
the
70s. Nothing's really changed.
Yeah.
And we need to... I think it's hard, too, because when you do tell, sometimes you become the victim.
Exactly.
And we have to stop doing that and listen to people. And not so much protect the abuser. We have to listen to what the person is saying. We really have to listen.
There's a lot of re-traumatizing that goes on when somebody is violated, and they reveal that, and they're not acknowledged, or it's, you know, pushed under the rug, swept under the rug. Or if they're told, just get over it, all of these
things. Yeah, I've been told that so many times before I actually came out to do stuff. And I'm like, get over it. It's in your head every day. It doesn't go away. Like, I'm going to be a work in progress the rest of my life. Like, it doesn't go away. It's there every day. So how can you just get over it? Like,
There's a huge amount of trauma. And then, too, even with telling your friend who you told not to tell, there's kind of a trauma there if inside... You're wishing she had, and she didn't, and there's another, what do I have to do, how do
so
I
really was hoping she would tell, even though, but she was a great friend.
I mean to bounce back your book again, but how long did it take you to put that together?
I started writing it, typing, Christmas Eve, and I was done Boxing Day. It was 3 days, I just wrote, and by March it was out.
Wow.
Like, it happened really quick. Like, and I went away to Costa Rica, and I'm like, I need this break. When I get back, it's going to be different. And I got back. She goes, your book's out. And I'm like, it's out. And it just so bombed from there. So I kind of knew something was going to happen. And the feedback, I have followers in the States. Like, the first 3 months, I had people in the States and everywhere emailing me. And I was like, how did I know about this in the States? Like, this is crazy. But the feedback, because I've been bullied, so it kind of has a little bit of everything. So I have people from all different dynamics of what they went through going, oh, I felt that. Now I, you know, it feels good that someone else went through that. Not feels good, but, like, they understand. And the feedback was amazing. But, like we talked earlier, there's days where you're like, why am I doing this? Because I'm having a bad day, and how can I help other people when I'm having a bad day? And every time that happens, I'll get an email or a letter from someone going, you helped me, thank you very much. And then I look up and go, okay, my divine, yes, I'm getting it. I am supposed to do this.
Well, one thing I noticed in your book, and I'll be quite clear, as I stated in the beginning of our interview, I haven't read it all the way through, but you put a bucket list in there.
Absolutely.
I have to ask you about your bucket list.
My bucket list, I try to do everything that I would never think I would do, because life is for living and taking chances, and that's what it's about. My first thing on my bucket list was doing the drop zone at Wonderland.
Okay, right on. That's fantastic.
It wasn't as bad as I thought.
It's fantastic.
I didn't enjoy it, but I did it. I was like, I have to do it. I have to do this. And all the way up, I'm like, I have to do this. I have to do this. But, like, traveling, places I want to go, the things I want to do, and even writing a book was, like, something I wanted to do. I just believe you should put a bucket list up and do it. Life is for living. Take that little extra and do it. You're going to an NHL hockey game in Tampa Bay. What else is on there? Oh, I haven't done Napa Valley yet. And Forgive My Father. My Forgive My Father was on there. I actually wrote him a letter. And it's in my book, too, is write a letter. And you don't have to mail it. Just write it to get it out. And it felt amazing, but I mailed mine.
That must have been difficult for you to do.
It was very difficult. I told him that I do not like him for what he did to me. He destroyed my life. He changed who I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But I forgive you, because I want you to know that when you pass away, you have my forgiveness. Because he has to live with himself the other side. And he will have regrets, but I needed to release him so I could live. And when I did, it felt amazing, and that's when I truly started living.
Are you communicating with him?
No, we don't speak. No, we went to in front of a jury, and they found him guilty. He thinks I made my mother put it in my head to make up, just because she's mad she got pregnant, and he's in denial or doesn't want to admit it, but you know, I know he knows. He knows the truth, so that's all that matters to me.
So it appears here, from what I'm reading, that you ended up also having getting pregnant very young as well.
Yeah. I got pregnant at 18, and I had an abortion. I wanted a child because I wanted that love that I didn't have. But it wasn't the right time for everyone around me. It was my biggest regret. And then I had my daughter at 21, and then a son at 23, and I, knock on wood, have the best kids. Like, I have the most amazing kids. I'm so proud of them. Being a mom was my one huge success. I have amazing kids.
Well, it's one huge, I'm sure you've had more than one success,
but that, yeah.
Maybe that's number one. And share about this sister here.
I have a sister that passed away. It was my father's daughter. And I'm pretty sure she's molested. And she's my angel now. And she's with me all the time. And if I'm around medium friends, they'll even say, who's the girl with me? Who's the sister? And I do this for her, too. Because I know she went through stuff. And she's the power behind me.
Did you live together?
She lived with my dad, so I didn't see her much. I have another sister with my mom, and she's in our organization because she's been through her whole life with me, going through my ups and downs. So she supports me because she's seen how far I've come. But my Erin is, she's with me.
Well, it's nice when you can speak about her and, you know, and share that, and that's here that she was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, earlier when we were just chatting, we were talking about when we're abused or when we have trauma in our lives, how that can be, you know, exhibited in different types of physical diseases and whatnot. And who knows, but...
That's true. And actually, when she passed away, my dad could deny it, my birth father, but when she passed away, the day of the funeral, I walked in, he said, "I've been a bad father, I want you to forgive me, this is God's punishment." So, and now Erin does, she's powerful on the other side. She's very powerful, and I feel her, and there's days that she comes through my mind and gives me that kick, and she's my guardian angel.
What was the biggest insight as you were writing this book?
Biggest insight. Just how far I've come. Just realizing, piecing my life together and putting it down. And I did my best to write nothing bad about anyone, because I didn't want to disrespect anyone still, no matter what. I didn't want to disrespect anyone. Just how far I've come, and just the process of what a brain and heart can take.
That's interesting. I haven't heard anybody say
no,
how much you can take. You know, it's true. I always talk about how resilient people are. And a lot of people that know me wonder how I can be involved in every aspect of sexual abuse and still be, you know, positive and all this. And it's because I see the resiliency.
Yeah. You have to take what you've gone through to help others. And when you get to that place where you've done some healing, you can do that. And that is so important because so many people need us. So many voices are not heard yet, and they may never be heard. But just knowing that we're doing this makes them feel better, knowing that people are doing this. So I'm not going to stop what I'm doing because it's so important. There's so many people out there, and if people really had any idea about what's going on in their neighborhood, it can be scary.
It is. Have you seen that on Facebook? There's a post that is circulating out because they've just released the number of offenders in different areas or regions in Ontario.
Yes.
Have you seen that? It's quite intimidating to, but not surprising, really, to see how many.
And that's not even half the ones that aren't reported. It's like triple that because most of them are not reported.
We were also talking a little bit beforehand, too. You said you had, was it a friend or there was somebody that wanted to get into the stream of helping people that are actually the perpetrators.
Yes, one of our board of directors, Kaylin, she is studying and learning about them and how to heal, because a lot of people that abuse have been abused. So we have to break the cycle somehow. And all these kids now, they're being abused, that are going to be the next generation, they're going to reoffend, because it's triggered in the brain, it's all they know. So we have to somehow get something in place to help them understand that they're not re-abusing. So it's a triple effect of each generation, and we need to do something. So we want to heal them. And it's a hard area for me. It's not an area I'm really going to dive into, but it's hers, and I totally, the more she's teaching me, the more I learn, and I totally agree. But we can't. We can't stop it if we're not doing something helping them.
Yeah, there's just a lot of people say, a lot of people working more and more so in the area of restorative justice.
Yeah.
Important. But I think it's also important to say, you know, that there are so many people that have been violated that don't reoffend. Because there's a trauma there that people, I know for myself, it was something that was in my mind that was, people are going to think I would touch their children.
Yeah,
I don't want to tell.
Yeah,
you're not gonna let me babysit your kids if you know that I was violated, even though there's no chance in hell.
And seeing there's no way I'm gonna do that, but so you can go one way or the other way, and some people don't have the strength or the power, or they're so, it controls them too much. But if we can get in there to kind of help and heal and do that therapy, we can guide them in the right direction.
Absolutely. And I should point out to the audience out there that it's statistically speaking, it's less than 1% of the population who've been offended reoffend.
Mm-hmm.
And still a staggering number. It doesn't seem like much, but it's enough to really screw up society in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And going all different directions. So the whole idea behind restorative justice, I'm totally behind that. I'm kind of getting into it myself now a little bit more at a higher level. And throughout the year, this year, I will talk more about it. It's kind of hard hearing it from, or talking about it to another survivor, because most survivors don't even want to concede that fact, because there's so much, I'm going to be polite in saying this, remorse against their abuser.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that's the last thing I want to talk about, any kind of therapy regards to that. The point still falls, well, okay, yes, just a person offended me, they offended many people, we still have to deal with these people. So basically, we're still dealing with it. Even if we throw them in jail, we're paying for it through our taxes.
Yep.
And therefore, why? Sure, you could throw them in jail, but what about after that?
They still need that therapy.
They still need that therapy. Something has to be done with them in some way. I mean, who am I to say how that to be taken care of? To me, chemical castration and all these other different things that they're doing, to me, doesn't make any sense. All that's doing is, wow. It doesn't solve the problem.
No, it doesn't.
Creating an angry
yes.
person.
Yes.
You know, so, there's this whole issue of restorative justice in regards to therapy or whatever it means that the offender is going to be treated should really be addressed at a much deeper level. And I know that in the coming year, as I get more educated in this issue, I'm going to push for that a lot more because, frankly, for me, and me being a grandparent now, I know that I don't want to have to worry about my daughter or my granddaughter. I don't want to have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially my granddaughter now. I have another picture in my story now.
Yes.
And I don't need that kind of worry. And I know others out there will have the exact same sentiment as I have in regards to this matter. So as far as restorative justice is concerned, I really hope that changes.
Same here now. I don't have grandkids yet, but now I was talking about this the other week, going, if I have grandkids, like, oh my goodness. I'm like, I'm going to be all over that because you're going to be scared, and like, I want to make sure they have the same protection my kids have.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only protect so far, but now it's another worry.
Another worry,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's go from worry to concern, though, because I think both of you guys, when you come from the this mama bear, papa bear zone of, at all costs, but I think that people have to be concerned too about passing on that worry and that fear. I think there's a distinction between being prepared and being knowledgeable versus being paranoid, and I teach
it's
that all the time.
It's a huge difference. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's huge. And the way you talk to children, that's why I mentioned also the Jan Hyndman book, a touching book, and it's the way you can speak to children about this. And the thing is, we program our children to not talk about sex and to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when something does happen, is it a surprise that you don't say anything?
Yep.
Right? So it's
a proper way of doing it, and not to scare them, but just to be teach them and be cautious, but not scare them.
Give them awareness.
Yes.
But in a positive, constructive manner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we say that head and shoulders, vagina and penis. You have to talk about things openly.
Exactly.
And anytime you're trying to keep a secret, you know, they're going to be interested, they're going to be curious, and they're going to go out on their own. They're going to get in trouble if you tell them, no premarital sex. It's going to be, well, why not?
Whatever. Let's make sure we're going to do it.
And then also, too, if somebody has been violated, there's usually two extremes. There's one running around and, you know, being promiscuous, or there's the other, and that, in my case, was like, nobody's touching me, you know? So we have these degrees, and I think that if we're more open with this,
Definitely. And if we have been abused, we need that real talking about, you know, how we can go, because I was more sexual, and I wish I hadn't, but I didn't know boundaries. It didn't mean anything to me. So if I had been taught that, or someone spoke to me about that, I might have, from my abuse, I would have learned, okay, I can say no, whereas I become that 4-year-old girl. And just, you know.
Yeah, we certainly have no understanding of sexuality as on a personal level of what it really means to us.
No.
Because that's just gone out the door,
yeah,
basically, when we were violated.
Absolutely.
Right? Out the door. And it's funny, because here at the Gatehouse and doing the groups that we've done, sexuality, it's funny how this comes up.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about that. And it's amazing how many people I come across, other victims or survivors, do not have a clue about as far as their barriers are concerned.
Yep.
They're really just figuring it out now after all these years.
Yep. And I'm still just figuring that out. But I now totally understand why, you know, I've had two failed marriages. And I have cheated because I can unemotionally be there.
That's right.
And,
unemotionally
and
attached.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I'm still just trying to learn those boundaries,
mm-hmm,
and hopefully I get it right.
Yeah, I get you on that one.
But I'm so protective of myself. So yeah, there's still things. We're always going to be a work in progress. But yeah, I'd like to. I still need some learning on that. I can admit that.
Yeah, so we're sitting here with Carrie Ann Kent, who graciously come down today,
mm-hmm,
and of course my co-host Deb. And so far, it's been fantastic. I really appreciate what you've been sharing with us. And we were kind of like, nobody can tell from outside, because we're obviously pre-recorded this in podcasting. We took a 2-second break there, and we started, before I turned this device back on again, we were kind of talking about sexuality, so we're just going to just dive back into it in regards to, we were talking about how when men are violated by a woman. And I guess let's just continue off with that, and then we can spin off to some other things if you ladies wouldn't mind.
Well, Stuart went out of the room, and
yeah,
we got into this conversation. And
I got the stats for 1 in 10 for women.
Yeah, well, you started talking about going into a group. So you were in a group with women.
With women, and they were all started bashing men, and it became a man-hating group, and I didn't like it because I was like, well, I have faith in men. Like, I this is not what I'm here for. I'm here to heal from the incest, and they were just man bashing. So I left the group because that's not what it's about. It's not what it was about for me. So I had to leave.
Yeah. So we started then talking about, you know, the situation with men, and I mean, men go through almost the same thing as females, and in fact, women do more shame with a man. And then we started talking about, okay, so then when a female, a babysitter or a mom, is violating a young boy, and the trauma that causes. The trauma that results in such shame and then confusion and guilt,
mm-hmm,
later on, because
I
was on the show, and you know, the guy was egging me on, like, what little boy wouldn't want to get, you know, aroused by the haughty babysitter? Like, the mom can never be haughty, or the aunt or the cousin.
Yeah, and I thought the stats were 1 in 10 in women, and mm-hmm, with talking and you guys and learning what's out there, it's 1 in 4?
It's higher than anybody could ever imagine.
Imagine.
And we just don't think of it that way, because we think of women as being nurturers. But for my book, when I interviewed Lynn Mastinell, and she works primarily with men for years and years and years, and I asked her that question,
that's,
you know,
crazy,
what's the ratio? She said 1 in 4. And I know, I mean, Stuart, you can talk on this too, because you're with men, but in the groups that I initiate, I'm in this room, and I'm going around, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's more than 1 in 4.
More than 1 in 4 is absolute, because I mean I can't put this statistically with the groups that I've done, but just a brief overview. I've seen some different dealing with different men over the time that I've been here, and I'm amazed. Like if I'm in with a group of maybe 8 to 10 men, and out of that 8 to 10 men, I guarantee you, 90% of the time, 7 to 8 have been violated both by women and men, or just by women.
People have to know this. Like, because you really see it as, or a man sexually abusing a kid, or a man sexually abusing a boy, but it really goes both ways.
But typically, it's been by both. It's not just been by one. And
wow.
Like, I mean, even speaking for myself, I've had both sides of the fence. And
me too.
Yeah.
Right? So,
and that, we could see how that would definitely change or confuse your thought process and how you look at relationships.
Absolutely.
And people like it. Like, even just me with a male, but I can't imagine how it would confuse you.
Well, you said for yourself, too, and I think this is really important. And I remember interviewing Stuart for my book.
Yeah.
And Stuart saying, you know, he felt like you had this, you know,
a sign on my head.
A sign on your
yeah.
head.
Exactly.
And you just said you
yeah.
were violated by more than one person,
yes.
too, right?
And even I was scoffed, and I had someone else break into our house, and then someone else flashed me. And I was like, what is it about me that's drawing? Like, what is it? And like you have this
sign
on your... So it must be the way we are, our mannerisms, they must know or something. Because it was like a sign that said, you know, I want to be assaulted. And it's like, why is it always happening to me? Because it does. It kind of keeps happening to you. And like, why is that?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time trying to figure that out, and I figured, well, that was a total waste of my time. So what I do now is I spend my time on healing and
yeah.
trying to show others that you can get past this. But I could not come to any conclusion. Maybe there's a PhD out there that can give me an answer on that one. And actually, that's what I'm going to ask Dr. Fred Matthews about when I see him at the conference. But because I'm trying to figure that out. Is there something that child has?
Yeah.
What does it give it energy? Is it just because the perpetrator... sees that child is vulnerable, how is it that he sees that child being more vulnerable than the others is my question.
But there are indications in all the research that I've done, it's very clear. In fact, I just read something just last night about an individual who was a teacher, and he actually, get this, he actually had a questionnaire done up, and he gave it out to his kids in his class, and what he was looking for was self-esteem issues.
Oh,
clever. Isn't that clever?
Yeah,
so that's how he did it. And for other people, you know, listen, we are programmed. We know. You can walk up and down the street or go into a mall. You know somebody who has more self-confidence
yeah.
than somebody else. You know who you can approach. And,
sure.
And how, you know, martial arts. How do
yeah.
you stand?
Yeah.
How do you project whatever it is? Listen, if you're a woman, you're in a bar and you're looking to take somebody home, you're putting yourself out a certain way.
Okay.
If you don't, you put yourself
yeah.
out in a different way. It's the same thing for a guy. It's the same thing if you're looking for a job, you don't come in and sit there and pick your nose. You know, you put out a different
energy. I had no self-esteem. I had low self-esteem. I walked looking on the ground. I didn't make eye contact, so they would have picked up on that instantly.
Exactly. And somebody who wants to date or wants to stalk you, they're looking for those indications, and I mean that's one of the things I teach when I work with women in self protection, is what I call it.
That's what I learned along the way. So now I walk in, my eyes are straight. I could be so
confident,
insecure inside, but I walk in like I'm confident and I've got the power because I do not give that out anymore at all.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they're looking for. It's a lot of children, and then I think that once you're violated, I know for myself, once I was violated, then. How do you, you know, even say no? Like a young child under the age of 10 years old doesn't have the verbal skills
mm-hmm.
to say, excuse me, you know, we're in this pool, and no, you're not going to put your hand down my top, and no, you're
yeah.
not coming up to from the bottom. But you just kind of, you shrink,
freeze,
you know?
And you become, yeah.
You've mentioned freeze a couple times. And in my book, I talk about, you know, there's always the fight back or the flee, get the heck out of there. And then I talk about freezing as well. So
mm-hmm.
do you want to share some of your thoughts on that?
Well, you freeze and you just kind of, like, I've been sexually assaulted in 20s and in 30s a couple times, and you say no, and you say no again, and then you just stop. And you just kind of freeze, and you kind of do that outside your body thing and just let it happen, and then, because you do, your emotions get cold, and it takes you back to that childhood where I have no say, nothing, okay. Get it over with. What you do, totally freeze and shut down.
You also not place the importance on it to a certain degree, so if they're going to take it doesn't
yep.
really mean anything.
Yeah, because
really.
Yeah, because without having those boundaries too, you kind of do that give up and just do it.
So as somebody who's traveled a long way, how do you see your boundaries shifting? Like where were they to where are they now in your
well,
life?
Well, now I'm... No one gets to a second date.
No one gets to a second
not
date?
Not very often, no, because I'm very protective now. And now I know what I want, I know what I don't want, and I know my worth now. So that's huge. And I know I deserve to be treated a certain way, and now I'm not going to settle.
Good for
now
you.
I know what I want, and I am very guarded, so if I ever do meet someone, I'm it's going to take them a while to get close to me. and now I know if I'm on a date and someone did try something, I'll give them a good punch. Because I'm with it. I said, no, it's not going to happen.
Good for you.
So now I've taken the steps to, once you start seeing what your triggers are or things, you realize you can be stronger. So in that area, I know my worth. Yes.
What were you like as a mom, or are you like as a mom?
As a mom raising my kids, I was very protective. I was very, very, very protective. But yet I gave them everything I didn't have. They had so much love, all the, you know, sports and everything else. But and they know, there was a point in my life where I said, because I did have my dad in my life, and I said, you know, I'm going to keep him out of my life now. And they asked why, and I said, well, I don't know if you want the answer, but I'm going to give it to you. And I said, he did things to me that he shouldn't do to his daughter. I said, okay, we get it. We don't want to know anymore. We don't want anything to do with him. So a few years later, I said, you know, you can talk to your grandpa if you want. That's what you want. And they're like, no, we don't want to. So I was very protective. But I didn't, it wasn't until my niece was 4 and she invited me into the bathroom to have, she was going to have a bathroom play. And I was like, I can't go in there. And then my sister's like, no, go on in. So I'm in there and she's playing and everyone's walking in and out. And I went, what innocence is. She's so innocent. She's so carefree and happy in the bathtub. And she's just, you know, happy. Mom and Dad are walking in. And I went, this is why I call it my innocence off. Because I went, this is what innocence is. And you don't see that in your own kids because I'm protecting. So that my goal is to protect. Well, that's with my niece, that's her parents' job, so I'm there just to love her. So that's when I actually realized what innocence was. And it was like, wow. I'm like, that, how could someone touch a child? I'm like, I don't get it. And that was the first step of me writing my book and my healing afterwards.
So what was it, what was the thought that stopped you that didn't want to go into that?
Just, because that's very private. And I didn't want her to think anything because I was in there. So I was very, I was embarrassed, and I was like, and my sister saw my face, and she goes, see the way, go ahead. And it was that exact moment that I just went, wow, she's so carefree in the world, and she's so innocent in this lovely world. And I would have been like this in the tub at 4 and 5, covering myself, and just to see her was like, anyone touches that little girl?
Well, that's a beautiful thing, and I remember the conversation, and Charmaine was in the book too, and she was very open and an advocate, so I can share her name. And she said that, you know, the first time that she was changing her child, not the first time she was changing her child, but one of the first time, and it just hit her, like, how could anybody do that to a child? And she had to leave. She just said she started to shake, and she told her husband to take care of the baby, because she just flashed, and it was the anger of how could somebody do that? You know, it's the programming that's involved.
So, through this time now, this gone along, how do your children take to you what you're doing? What kind of support do you get from your children?
They don't want to know anything. They haven't read the book. They don't really want to know what I'm doing because it means emotion for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when they have kids, they're going to see it differently. But right now, they don't want to know their mother's hurt, and they don't want to deal with that emotion. I was upset at first, but now I understand why. And I will kind of email once in a while saying what I'm doing, and they'll say, oh, good. But they're just not ready to know the pain that I've had. And they know I'm doing talks, and they are proud of me. But it's just an area they're not ready emotionally to go to yet. So they're in their 20s, and they're just not ready to know my pain.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, kids don't really want to know what the parents are doing in a lot of cases. So this is, you know, sort of the dark side. So,
yeah.
So they don't want to know that. But, I mean, you're shedding a lot of light on this. On a topic that's difficult to speak about, and I know myself when people ask me what I'm doing, I'm doing my best to remove the stigma and the taboo, so then people can move towards healing in the absence of shame, and that's why a lot of people get stuck, just because of shame.
Yes, and we shouldn't carry the shame. It's not our shame to carry. We shouldn't have any shame. If we were assaulted, it shouldn't be our shame. It's we need to come forward. They have the shame, and they can deal with it because it's not.
Mm-hmm. You charged your father.
I didn't charge him, but I took him to their criminal injury court.
So what was that? So the decision to do that, and what happened?
I needed to do it. I just needed to. I didn't care what I got. I just wanted to let him know that I was doing this. And he, when he went, it was a teleconference, so I didn't get to actually see him. But I just wanted him to be found that he's guilty. I wanted that. And when they said it, because I had evidence from 40 years ago, which they don't usually have. They had my files from when I was 7, 8, 9, so it had everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I knew it was something I just had to do, and just to know he was guilty was like, fine.
Did he deny it?
Oh, he denied it. He said that my mom was putting it in my head, making it up, and that she's just doing this because my mom's mad because she got pregnant at 16, and I was just blown away. But that's what they always do. They always blame the other parent.
Yeah.
So,
how old was
I when it happened?
When you were raped by your father, when the abuse was going on?
My earliest memory is 4, and that wasn't the first time because it was normal feeling then. So 4 till about 8.
So he was denying the whole chunk of time, not like a one.
He said I had mental issues and I was making it up because of my mom. And I'm like, yeah, I do have mental issues. But not because I'm making it up, because of what you did to me.
And how old were you when you decided to pursue this?
Just last year.
Oh, so this is really...
Yeah,
this
it took a year because he kept fighting it and getting lawyers to stop it and stuff. So it was supposed to be this timeline and it went longer. But this just happened.
Wow, so this is really new and rock. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Exactly. So basically, I guess once you initiated, it just took off.
It just took off, and everything that's kind of happened, it just all fall into place, but he has to live with himself.
Yeah.
I interviewed Olaf Murphy, who's
the
warden, Sean, who is chief police, or I can't remember the exact credential, but way up there, anyways.
Yeah.
And one of the questions I had asked him was, so many people now, they're in their, 40s.
And that's when usually it comes forward, when you have,
Yeah, but you see, then it's like the evidence. Like, that is his concern, because the police can do, and we see this in the house, people that are thinking about doing that, and then I actually say, think about it, and write out why you want to do it, what do you think you're going to achieve, and how you're going to feel if everything hits the fan, and then it just gets both. Because it can be quite a journey.
Well, it was an emotional journey. And it wasn't for that 40 years, because when I called the hospital and they didn't have any records, I was devastated. And then when they called back a week later going, this doesn't usually happen, but we found your records. And I went, what?
That's great.
And I was like, and they even said in the jury room that we have never had evidence this far back. And I was like,
so what was it? What
was it was all just about my anger. They had me on heavy duty drugs. Like, I was drugged and I did not know at all. So my anger, and even the therapist saying, she was sexually abused, I don't think this is the right time to go forward with charges because she's not mentally stable. And so everything was in there. Like, everything. So there was, it wasn't just my word anymore, it was my childhood. So all the way back to 78. So yeah, and it was a nail.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was a nail.
I got goosebumps in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Found evidence from that long ago, because that's what a lot of said.
It doesn't usually happen. I got lucky, and and I truly think everything happens for a reason. I think my evidence was made to be found for this to happen. So I started Butterfly Healing because it just put me in this journey, but
The other thing that he said is, if you can find other people that can support what was going on at the time.
My mom, and she remembered all the police officers' names back then. But what's sad is my dad has molested a lot of other little girls in the neighborhoods that he lived in. And
I can only help to turn the police.
He was also a big brother, and I know he molested that little girl.
I'm podcasting right now, but I'm not that
house. But I was 23 when I left.
Yeah.
So, like, there's so many other little girls out there that he's molested.
Like, I'm only going to have about 10 minutes from
and I wish I knew who they were. You don't know who your childhood friends were, but there was a point where we'd have to move. So, I wish I could help them. I wish I could, but I know there's at least eight other little girls.
What was the result? What was the impact on him after the decision?
I don't know. The only thing I've ever heard is my stepmother sent me a Facebook message telling me to go to hell. And I didn't smile and went, "Prove you're guilty, otherwise you wouldn't have done that." So I just deleted her, blocked her, and went.
So did he receive any jail time? Or
no, because it was a civil.
Civil,
yeah. So
what's that?
I got money, and then they can go after him for the money, so he'll have to pay back what they paid me. And I can still civilly charge him and go after him for a lot more and then pay the government back and charge him criminally. But right now that's just not in my cards because my cards are for healing others right now.
You know, it's funny you say that you add it doesn't matter because I thought about doing the same thing myself. But then I was told not to, that I should do the criminal first and then follow through with the civil after. So that's the part I'm kind of confused because I keep hearing it from both sides. I know others have done the exact same thing. So
yeah.
I'm just curious to why I was advised to do it that
and
way.
And even if you do the civil first, you have, it's even better going into criminal with that, to have that. But I went civil. I wasn't ready to do criminal, to have a lawyer destroy me on the stage and everything else. But yeah, I this is the route I went. I needed to do it for me. I wasn't ready to do criminal, so I did that. So I would do it.
Well, in criminal, they really can rip you apart.
Yeah,
yeah,
and,
right.
So, yeah, and so even after this happened, I said to my mom, "Should I do it criminally?" And she said, "Think about that." And I did, and I'm like, "Yeah, I don't. I got what I needed."
Very interesting. I'm really, really happy you shared that with us
yeah.
because a lot of people are confused, like myself, in regards to, well, do I really want to pursue this or not? Like, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, speaking for myself, there's no amount of money you could ever give me back.
Not,
right yeah,
the money means
nothing.
It wasn't the money. Money
no, it's not about money. It's about the justice.
It was just to know that he was found guilty.
Yeah.
I paid off my debt. I went to all my debt.
Yeah.
So, and I'm in more debt now from this. So it wasn't a bonus for me.
No.
It was just, I just needed to know that he did this, and he has to be accountable for it, and he has to live with that. So that's all, I didn't care. I got nothing in the time of the day. I just wanted that.
That's kind of the satisfaction I'm looking for, too, at the same time. But, you know, it is what it is. And I don't even like saying it like that, but it's just plain that simple. You know, the
no,
system works this way, you got to fall this way, and there's
the
way the scales work, whether it's civilly or criminally, it always balances out. And unfortunately, in that process, you win or you lose, and that even sounds horrible the way I was saying
it. And I had to prepare myself because my family said, "What happens if this doesn't come out that way?" I said, "Well, I'm going to need a lot of therapy. I'm going to be destroyed." I said, "But I know what happens, and I know the truth. So it will happen the way it's supposed to happen, and for me it did."
Well, it seemed to release that.
Oh,
yeah.
That was, yeah,
to have your day in the court, so to speak, because I know a number of people that have gone and pursued the offender, and not so good results in most cases.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some yes, but in terms of the person being charged or being put in jail, basically so minimal.
Yeah,
but it's more about, I think, regaining your voice or having a voice and being able to say, "Hey,
being strong enough to say, you know, you did this to me, Dad." And I even got to talk to him and ask him, like, because he denied it. I'm like, "Dude, I remember being pulled over by the police and me going in the cop car." And he said, "Nope, didn't happen. Nope, that didn't happen." And I'm just, like, shaking my head and going, "Okay." But at least he knows what happened.
So
now I have a
yeah. We are going to, because...
Yeah, I remember that.
Who wants to be
yeah.
best buddies with a guy that is, you know, sexually violating his children? Who wants
oh,
to
I
hire
that
individual? Who, you know, you don't want that. I mean, there are some women that stay with him, but, you know, vice versa.
She's still
but
with him.
That's just mind-boggling.
But she knew years ago she had questions about my sister Erin being molested.
That's
like, even though she denied it, she knows deep down.
Because
that
I grew up with her, and I was
she knows. So why would she be angry at me and send me an email if I wasn't telling the truth? But me, it's not bearing a secret. because I lived in shame for so long, and that's why I want other people not to feel ashamed and not to hide it, because you deserve to have your life. And I'm letting you know. I won't let anyone else in.
Alive, but you loved your aunt.
Yeah.
You know,
but you have to protect yourself. You can't heal yourself. You only get one life to live. If you're protecting everyone else, you're not healing yourself. And you need to heal yourself. I only get one shot of this that we get to remember.
Where would you like to see your father right now?
Sorry.
I would just like people in the community to know, because they have a barn stable where two girls come and ride horses and stuff. So I would love the community to know that I'm a little bit more than left, because I know there's no way he's stopping. I know his daughter, so that's one thing. I don't know how to do that. I mean, I don't want to do it in a mean way. It's just other people have to be aware. But,
and then you have to be really careful, because if you go out there and your soul is out there, you could turn around and bite you right back.
Yeah, so like,
The way our laws work is to bite you right back.
Yeah, because they don't always
do that.
That's right. I mean, unfortunately, you can't just go and say it, and it has to be proven in court.
It's a roundabout way. So does he have the same last name either on your book
or
your...
No, my niece picked out the same. I mean,
okay.
So the book
has the dog's name.
Yeah, what about the dog? I mentioned it. I looked in the beginning of the book. And
I have a dog. I had a dog, Harley, and he passed away.
Okay.
So he was the longest male relationship I had in my life.
Yes, I noticed that.
12 years.
It's 12 years. I thought it was beautiful.
It's devoted to him, because when I lost him, he died in... longest male relationship I've had.
Well, I have to say that too. The only one. 18 years.
Exactly.
My dog.
See,
I have a dog for Murphy. I had a dog too, but it was a he, not a she.
I have a new puppy, but and I love her. She's definitely my protector. I'm a German Shepherd.
And you were saying that,
She is my protector and my best companion. And
she has a car?
No, I couldn't bring her. She's at the kennel, play date. because a dog is unconditional love, and that's that love. Because you kind of, there's a bond you end up missing in life. And my mom was young, and I didn't bond with my dad, so I never had that bond. So with my kids and now a dog.
That's true. Unlock the door. There were several people that talked about dogs, and I know that in group too.
PTSD, the dog is
missing.
Dogs and horses are the best for PTSD.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely.
There's one of our participants here, you know who we're talking about.
There's a few of them.
Yeah, there's a few of them, and exactly, and that's exactly what they do. Once in a while, they get together and bring people over to the stables and horses just for therapy.
And that's part of the Veterans Week, which we'll talk about, but we have a lady who trains PTSD dogs coming.
Yes, I'm curious to hear about that, because I've been researching that online, and it's very intriguing, because I love dogs. I've got some bells going off in my head.
Well, talk about that. And then because there's actually a gal in one of the groups right now. She's waiting. She's in line. So maybe she's getting one of your friend's dogs.
She's from Hamilton,
Hamilton,
Yes, and she trains the PDS dogs. And I wanted her to come, because part of what we do is I tell people, get a dog. It's such a companion. And, they just know when you're upset, and they know when something's going wrong, and she's taking me out of my box. Like, I go places and I do things which I would never do alone, but she's just taking me out of, I would love to make her a companion dog and take her everywhere, because she's just my protector.
Well, these dogs, when they're trained, they'll go
everywhere.
Just like a sightseeing dog. They, mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're allowed it. Anywhere. And these post-traumatic stress.
Well, they use
this is what they are, right?
Yeah.
They'll do, they'll do when you go home, they'll go around the perimeter of the house. They'll do a check.
Someone trained mine is to patrol the house.
Exactly. Yeah. And some people, when you have nightmares, they'll detect that. They'll wake you up. It's not just I shouldn't say just, but you know what I mean. They're trained to do a number of things to help you when you're suffering.
Even in sickness, sorry, Mom, but I got another tattoo. And I came home the other day, and I had a shirt on and a sweater, and she's sniffing all over my arm. She's sniffing and licking, and I'm like, I didn't know that I have I'm just kind of looking at her, and then the next day I come home with a migraine. I'm just laying on the bed with my hands on my head, and she's licking my head, and I'm like, wow. Like, they just
they know
things.
Yeah, they know.
Yeah, they know. Dogs, like, you don't have to say a thing, and your dog will know exactly what you're doing.
They do. They sense everything. That's why they laugh and say, your dog's not a guard dog. I'm like, oh, yeah. But she senses I feel fear. I'm like, it's a story for that person. She's going to sense it. If she can sense a headache and a tattoo, then,
Now, before you jump into this, I want to ask you a little bit about what you did last year, like with Jean-Paul, and then we'll jump right into this, if that's all right. Can you explain about that last year, about the conference last year you did in Ottawa?
Yeah, we did a conference with Voice Found, and with Matt Sandusky and Jean-Paul, and it was question and answer
And you were a keynote speaker, by the way.
All three of us kind of did it together.
Oh, okay.
And then just people in the audience were survivors and family members, just about, you know, how to heal and how we feel and how we do feel differently and how our normal is different than other normal. And it actually was a really good healing process for me, because being with those two guys, I really did learn that, you know, how I think is normal.
Yeah.
It is our normal.
Oh,
so it was a really good experience for me.
I like Jean Paul's
all
these tattoos.
I love
him. And I like all the tattoos.
He's got more.
More, yeah.
Yeah, he's like my big brother. Like, he's been a great a person for me to meet and talk to and stuff. So I'm looking forward for him coming and being there.
Oh, wow.
So now we're on to that. Tell us about the conference coming up in April.
Well, we got a grant from the government and for Victims Week, which we call Survivors Week. Yeah, we called it Empowered for Life, and it's helping survivors of sexual violence find hope, healing, and happiness. And on Sunday, we're having a healing fair, and we have a bunch of people coming. There's someone that does Taekwondo, but he does it for healing, mind, and power. And we have bar paddle boarding and just different things so people can come to see what may help them in healing. And some therapists and stuff, so because not everything works for everyone. So we want people to see what's out there in the area. So we have about 20 vendors now, which is awesome. That's on the Monday. And then Monday we have at Unifor, we have Glenn Canning coming, JP and myself. And Glenn Canning is Rattaya Carson's father, if anyone knows the case. And he has an amazing, amazing talk that he's going to do. And Man Up is teenage boys. We talk to other teenage boys about manning up and being respectful to women. And no means no, and if we're drunk on a bed, it doesn't mean we can have that.
Yeah, no, sometimes.
Really respecting, and we want hopefully other high schools to take that initiative and do it. And then Tuesday we have 1 Billion Rising, and we're going to do the same talk there. And then we're off to Ottawa Thursday and Friday to speak at high school.
That's great. So all this will be done in Owen Sound, correct?
Port Elgin and Owen Sound, and then Ottawa.
Okay, great.
And where do people find out more about that?
On our website. We have empoweredforlife.ca or butterflyhealing.ca. Everything's on there.
A lot of time.
I'm curious, though, how much work did it involve you to organize all this?
It's been a lot of work, because we're so new and this kind of got grown. Like, we did it on a whim. Someone gave us the idea. Voice Sound gave us the idea, and we kind of applied for it. Didn't think we would get it, and all of a sudden we got it. So it's a big learning lesson for our first year. I have an amazing girl, Heather, that she's done the brochures, the websites, everything. And I couldn't be here without her. She's just been amazing, and she's her and I and Kaylin, we've done a lot of work. So yeah. But you know what? In the end, I'm looking forward to the end result. I'm one person in that audience walks away just feeling, you know, empowered, then that's what it's about. It's about healing. The whole week is going to be about healing.
When is it again?
Victims Week, April 19th to 25th.
And what is your website?
www.butterflyhealing.ca and empoweredforlife.ca.
I always ask anybody who I interview this question, and I have to ask you the same as I have the bachelors. Where do you see the awareness level in the future in regards to sexual abuse?
It can only get bigger. It has to be. More people are speaking out, and we have to speak out. We really have to get the word out there, because I am shocked at the people that when I tell them what I do, look at me and say, is it really possible? And that just blows me away, and I explain to them, this is what's happening in your neighborhood, and this is what's that, and this is what's proven, so can you imagine what's not being reported? And they actually are blown away, and people need to know this. People need to know what's going on, and we can't shove it under the rug.
Anymore.
Not anymore, and it needs to get out there. And every once in a while I get a bump in the road where someone kind of says, don't do this, and you get a little threat, it makes me do it more. Because if I'm ruffling your feathers, it means I'm doing my job.
Good for you.
And I won't stop, because people need us, and awareness is getting bigger all the time, and we just need to stay out there. It has to be. I wish it was. Some of the things that I've learned now and about the groups, I wish there was that when I was younger. So the more we do this, we can help the next generation and help people. And it's just so needed. People don't realize how much this is out there.
At what age do you think the individuals who would come to this type of event?
Teenagers enough. We would like teenagers there, because Glenn's story is about texting, and that one text can destroy a life, and you can be charged now for texting and bullying. Like, if I had Facebook in high school, I wouldn't have survived high school. I can't imagine. So people really need to know what his story is and Taya's, because I can't imagine the internet and stuff now.
Well, I know when I go into the high schools, they're not supposed to be carrying their cell phones with them as they go into class, which is leaving in the locker. But when there are certain females that can't participate in certain class, they're sitting on the bench and they have the cell phone out, and I always make them put it away.
Yeah,
it's non-stop. Even driving, people walking across the street, it's non-stop, right? So it's huge. And I know somebody years and years ago when it first started to come out, even the internet. And there was a situation where it was bantering back and forth, and the one girl ended up getting charged, because we're sitting here and we're joking around. And I say something to you, and we're laughing.
Yeah.
You know where I'm coming from. But when you see it in the text,
you
it's
can take
words.
It in anger or laughing.
Right.
And it ruins a lot of, even me, it ruins a lot of relationships, because you take it one way, it's meant another way. And I'm someone who's defensive, so I take things defensively. So, and what I might be a joke, someone else takes defensively. So it really, we've lost our communication of calling people. Like, back in the day, you actually had to call and have that communication, and we are losing touch with that.
Oh, totally. I totally agree. I hate texting. I hate emails. Just call me, darn it.
Yeah, and the younger generation, they're losing that empathy.
Yes,
they're
totally.
They're losing that feeling, and they're doing these things because there's no feeling.
No
there.
Feeling at all.
Like, none. And this is the next generation, and we have to do something.
Try to change it somehow. But you know what? Who'd be easy to say, but I mean, a lot of parents I find don't take that same care and attention that was taught to us, right?
Yeah.
That same kind of etiquette, if I could put it in that manner, or there's just nothing personal about it at all in communicating as far as the way the kids are, just text and that's it.
Yeah, I'm so glad, like, my kids, I taught them that manners, that old school, when a procession goes by, take off your hat, stand
right.
there, open a door for a lady, like, I've taught them all that, where kids nowadays, like, I know parents are more busy and stuff, but you can really see the difference.
Oh, huge.
You can totally see the difference. Even the work ethic is different.
Oh, yes.
Like,
that drives me crazy.
Totally.
If somebody wants to work.
I know, and when they do work, they don't work like, I'm a hard worker, and you get some people who are young, and you're like, they're just, it's such a different time than even our grandparents. Like, they don't
can't
think
really
we work as hard as they do. Everything's changing. We need to, hopefully
there.
The new millennium, and the little 4 or 5 year olds, they're a little more intuitive,
on this
I find.
Podcast.
So, hoping that changes the teenagers, because
it's not going to be rich.
The younger generation's going to balance out with the teenagers we have now, but we really need to change some things.
No,
and everything, you know, it comes down to communication and respecting
Absolutely.
Each other, and we know this from this topic, how powerful it is, because if we respected and really had a healing way of thinking of love, and, you know, in the way it was intended, we wouldn't have, you know, sexual violations going on. People wouldn't be confused about what is appropriate and not appropriate. So certainly I think by, you know, what you're doing and, you know, what you and I are both doing too, is to have that, the conversation that people are finding they're dark, but they're not. They're uplifting to say, you know, we can talk and we can share and we can be vulnerable and we can move forward and heal together. It's so important that you're, what you're doing. How many people are you expecting at these events?
Well, I'm hoping for a lot. We're doing a lot of ads in the paper and radio, so I'm hoping for a lot. I've been we weren't able to get into the high schools in our area, but I've told all the teachers and principals, so I'm hoping a lot. Because I
did it already, but I have to. We'll be talking
about
it.
Even about bullying, I was bullied in school.
Talking
and I'm growing up and being older now, those bullies, they're obviously bullying for a reason, and everyone else is just as insecure as you are. So you really I want them to realize, like, the bully, they're going through something in their life, a reason for that. And I want everyone to look, hey, the next person may seem secure, but everyone's just insecure. So you got to stop bullying and see each other as people. And I really hope a lot of high school students come. I'm really hoping, but I'd like to have 300.
But I can have 50. You want to plug any sponsors?
Well, we have the Department of Justice Canada. They've made this all happen. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm glad. And I've emailed back and forth a couple times saying I'm going to show you guys proud. Like, we're going to do something really amazing. So, and that's why we set out to do something that was just about healing. And hopefully it's what I want to happen and one of the goals, so it should happen.
So is it just so people, you know, say it's a week, right, and saying, oh, I can't commit to a week, but it's not really a week. You're in different spots, right?
Yeah, we're at the Lakeshore Rec on the Sunday for the healing event, Monday in Port Elgin, Monday night at Unicorn Port Elgin, then Tuesday with No One Found, and then Ottawa Thursday, Friday. So you only have to go to one event just to hear what the speakers are saying, or the healing fair to see what's out there, and just walk through. You can walk out. You don't have to talk to anyone.
No, not yet. Shortly, though.
Just one night, either.
Yeah, so even if you're shy and haven't said anything and you're in that area, then it's an opportunity to get some pamphlets and some information.
Yeah.
It's Glenn Canning. Could you talk a little bit about him? He's one of your guests on here. We didn't really mention much about him. We talked about Jean-Paul, but what about Glenn Cannon?
He's Mateo Parsons' dad, and Mateo was
you're over halfway.
And she committed suicide. And I just actually read a letter he wrote about what she would say now, and it was so heartfelt. But the pain she went through, I can't imagine the bullying from that, and I just can't imagine. So his story is going to be a very powerful, and how that's why I want teenagers to come to realize you can't touch a woman, you can't do that. Your phone is so dangerous at times. You can destroy someone's life, and I want them to think, okay, you did this, but how would it feel if it happened to you? The actions you do, I want you to think about if it happened to you. And if you wouldn't like it, then why would you do it to someone else?
And words are real. Words are so powerful. The thing that I say to the kids when I talk about sexting is, listen, how would you like to be the last one, whether it's sexting or whether it's, like, right there in front of you? How would you like to be the last person that insults that person, or in this girl's case, says, you know, she deserved it, or the guys didn't do it, or get over it, or whatever. How would you like to be the one that has the last word? And that girl goes home, just like Atea did, and she takes her life. Do you want to be the last person doing that? Or would you rather be on the side of supporting that individual? It doesn't mean fixing it, just listen.
Good.
Which side do you want to be on?
Exactly. That's exactly the point they need to think about. And I feel her, I'm a feeler, and I feel the pain she went through. Like, I can't imagine. But she is such a powerful force on the other side. Like, me coming together with ALA Haven and Glenn coming, I'm like, she is so putting this together because she wants this out there. She doesn't want other people to go through that. I can't imagine what girls go through. Even Amanda Todd, she quickly, you know, innocently slashed someone, and it destroyed her life.
Yes.
And some cyberbully destroyed her life. And this little girl is a beautiful singer, and she didn't deserve this. Why? Just people really need to think about, if it was them, how would you feel? If it was your sister, how would you feel? So you have to think about that. You have to really, again, we're losing that feeling. We're losing that feeling of what other people feel.
So again, kids too, you know, there's so much going on about bullying, and then the focus becomes on bullying as opposed to what is appropriate behavior in this situation. The gal flashes. There's, you know, one of my sisters is a teacher, and there was a girl that a boy talked her into taking a picture of her breast and sending it, and he ended up sending it all over the school. And, I mean, we could talk about what are the insecurities that the girl had or the self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
Why did she do that initially? But then what is it about all the other kids? Where was the person stepping up and saying, stop, this is not...
And they can be charged now.
They can be charged.
All of them.
It's porn.
Yeah. So now, you need to think about what you're doing, because you're
changes. Like I say to the kids, you want to be a teacher? You want to be a doctor? You want to be a nurse? You want to be a lawyer? You want to be a politician? Who do you want to be moving forward? Because you don't know. You think you might now want to be a plumber or electrician or whatever, but you don't know what you're going to be. If you do behaviors like this, it will follow you around for the balance of your life.
Yeah.
And when you put any picture on the internet, any words, when you hit send, they don't go away. They're there. And somebody who's savvy can find anything. I know I'm interviewing right now for a job position. And the first thing I did was Google the individual's name, and then I went on their Facebook.
Yep, that's how you find
it. And I can't,
yep.
There's one guy I would have hired, I'm looking at his Facebook and what he's written. I said to my business partner, look at this. I don't know how to interpret it.
Yeah.
It's text. And there's no way. I feel bad, because I'd love to give the guy a job. But I'm the last 4 or 5 days, he came in on Monday, I'm going insane inside. Because I those are his words. So whatever you write, and besides, he doesn't have any privacy on his Facebook. I can read everything. I can go back right to the beginning of his Facebook, his journey, his whole thing.
Yeah, see, nothing is secret anymore.
Mm-mm.
Nothing is secret anymore. You can't, once you get on the internet, you post something, say something, there forever.
Yep.
You cannot get away from it.
Well, I think it's a good message, you know, and you mentioned too, that trying to get into the high schools, and there's being some resistance there.
Well, they said there's a new government law in place for schools that they don't want to talk about sexual abuse and everything else. And but yet I got a grant for that. So it's
the government gives you a grant to talk to teenagers.
Yeah.
But there's a law that says you can't go in school. Or a policy.
A policy.
It's not a law.
Policy.
Policy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, and it's hard. It's another topic they don't want to deal with because they're afraid it will trigger kids. And but yet it could help a kid, and we put things in place. It's just, it's bureaucracy.
Okay, so tell us about the workshops at the conference now.
Yes, on the Tuesday afternoon, we're going to have it open to police, counselors, therapists, and to the public now, so that you can meet us one-on-one, and we can give a little bit about ourselves, and it's a question-and-answer period. So we can totally ask questions, because we would like to change, have some policing, and have them, not everyone does it, and a rare chance an officer goes in uniform. I think they should be not in uniform, because a child's not going to give up someone they love. Even counseling, if you do it by a book, you need to bring other survivors in. We just need to change on how we can heal, because it's not working for everyone, and we really need to work together and bring survivors in to help and know how to we can change policy so it works for everyone. So we're opening it up, a question and answer, so people can ask whatever they want.
So you don't have to have a structured topic in any of the workshops?
We're going to give ideas about what things we want to change.
Can you give me examples?
Well, having officers not in uniform, and also not even in suits.
Okay.
Not to go in a suit, because it's still authoritative. So I want to have that changed, and have them in wearing a kid's shirt underneath and take it off, so that you go in and don't listen to the parents, because it's always a he said, she said. Go straight to the kid, listen to the child, and that's what it's about. And it's just that.
Wrong.
And same with schools, how we do need to have this in the schools, and we need to have someone there who is open and talking about it, because
we do have to deal with it.
So it's kind of like all our opinions and how we can change things, and then they can ask us whatever they want.
Huh?
That's fantastic. Well, I don't even with the conference speaker, I look forward to the workshops.
Yeah,
they're
in the fridge.
So vital for passing information around to all the different levels.
Yep. And your workshop, I wanted to go to it, but it's I think it's during time.
Yeah,
and
Thursday,
I was like,
Friday. Yeah.
I know, I was like, oh.
I'm going to go on air. And
what's so great about workshops, they're organic, and you start off with a little bit, and you can't even anticipate half the time where they're
I want to go to the next one for sure, because I definitely want to go.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's the chance where I get to get the app and see people. This will be my fourth one, so this will be the fifth year, but this is my fourth one. So it's been very intriguing to see other people that have been involved with this and what it's done for me, like the connections I've made. Internationally even too.
That's
it's not,
awesome.
Not just locally. So and I think it's very important for the community as like what you're doing as well. And it's great because you're doing it in three different locations, right? You're bouncing around.
Yeah, we're kind of spreading the wealth.
Yeah. And it's funny you're going to Ottawa, because that's where I'm from, and that's originally where my abuse originated from, was from Ottawa. So, and I have a daughter, my granddaughter, they live back there as well.
Oh,
actually, they live in Gatineau, Quebec.
Oh, we're staying in Gatineau.
You're staying in Gatineau?
Yeah.
And beautiful there. I just love it. I mean, I don't have one of the biggest reasons why I left there and I came here. Obviously, the first reason, I always loved it here. Because it's one of your cousins of Uxbridge. Well, my aunt was a school teacher in Uxbridge.
Oh, very nice.
So as a child, this was my escape when I came to Toronto. Was during my abuse, I'd come here, I'd go to my aunt's house, and it was fantastic. Because I didn't have to worry about being abused. Like, it was great. So I just loved coming here as a child. And how lucky for me, I live here now. And granted, I don't live right in the city. I live outside the city, but the drive is nothing. It really is nothing. Especially the type of work they do. Driving is nothing. So I'm so lucky and have to be part of that. But it's great how you've got centered all around in three different centers.
Yeah. Well, my abuse is a new market. My goal is I want to do a talk in new market eventually.
Great.
That's one of my goals. Do one right there.
Yeah. So I guess we are coming close to, I guess we're pretty much coming to an end, unfortunately. I wish we had more time, because I'm sure we could talk in another 2 hours quite easily with all the stuff that is related to this. Now, I will ask you to come back again at some point, for sure. And I would love to hear more also about the conferences, although I'm sure we'll be talking to you after that anyway.
Awesome.
But for you to come back, and we'll talk about it again on the air.
That's
well.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Again, I can't thank you enough for coming in
thank
on Saturday.
Thank you for having me.
And I say on, give yourself a plug another time. Also with the conference, but also with the Butterfly Games.
Sorry, now I'm going to go on and teach
you. Plug yourself. Butterfly Healing. Yes, we do the paddleboard therapy, and we take people out and do hikes, and it's just all about being real. And if anyone's interested, please send us an email at www.butterflyhealing.ca. You can contact us. So we'd love to have someone come out, and even bring a family member. It's all about healing. All of us are survivors and family members, so we will all have dinner with you and chat, and it's just really that bonding time of knowing you're talking to someone else. So we have great things ahead of us, some more women's retreats, and hopefully a man retreat and a male retreat, and a lot of things to look forward to.
Again, thank you, Carrie.
I really appreciate it.
And Deb, too, for coming on Saturday.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Carrie, too, for sharing part of your story and talking about your book, My Innocent Loss, and talking about the conference and doing all the work and going through the healing and having the courage to do all that. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Are you on now?
Yep. Well, there we go. There's an interview Deb and I had with Carrie Ann Kent. Carrie, if you're listening, I can't thank you enough for coming down and sharing your story, sharing about your book, My Innocent Loss, about your website, Butterfly Healing, and about the conferences coming up, and just your general experiences. It was wonderful having you here. Deb and I just loved it. It was fantastic. We had great conversation. I'm so happy and honored that you were here. And I'm looking forward to the next time you come back. And I do apologize to anyone listening out there. I didn't think I had my mic on there. I didn't even realize it. So if you heard anything, well, I do apologize, and hopefully nothing, well, I don't think I said anything bad or anything was said bad, but nevertheless, I apologize. And as far as next week is concerned, I'm going to just jump right into that now. Next week, I'm going to be talking probably, well, I'm going to, actually, Deb and I are going to be talking about shame and guilt. It's a little bit more higher level, and it's so resonating with most of our participants that come through the house here, and I really feel it would be a great time to talk about it, not only our experiences, but the different ways of moving past that. I think would be a great thing to talk about with Deb, and, you know, there's so much involved in it. It can be so, well, I hate using this word complicated, but it can be so complicated with an individual, especially if they don't recognize about their shame and their guilt. So that's what Deb and I will be talking about next week. And it should be, well, hopefully you get something out of it, as I feel it's very, very important to talk about it. I know that, like I say, when we do groups, our groups are only 2 hours, and yet we could probably talk 4 hours about it, because once the participants understand about the shame and the guilt, where it goes to and where it ends up is all often very resonating with them, and it's very hard too for some people to talk about. So anyway, so next week that's what we'll be talking about, and I don't think I'm going to stay on too much longer. Actually, I'm going to pretty much cut the wind here now, as they say, or I'm going to sign off. But I just want to, again, thank you for listening. And, again, I can't thank you enough, Carrie, for coming here and being part of this. And wish you well in the conference coming up. I'll certainly be thinking about you, as our conference will be on at the same time. So wish you the best of luck, and we'll be talking to you soon. So talk to you next week. Thank you. Have a good night. And most importantly, take care of yourselves. Good night.